Check, check. Check, check, check. Good afternoon. This edition of the Storytelling Hour on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, was pre-recorded to be broadcast on Monday, March 13th, 2017. You can tune in to Epic Radio at www.enlightenradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. And today, we are celebrating, on air, the birthday of one of my earliest storytelling mentors, my dad, Bill Crawford. I'll be sharing a few stories later on in the program, and we have a couple people calling in to share some stories about Bill and remember what a character he was, not just for storytelling. I'm going to kick off the show with just a couple biographical facts about my dad, so I have something in common, the people who are going to tell these stories, including myself and you, our listeners. My dad was born in 1911. He was a middle child of eight children, and his early years were spent in Lancaster, New York, which is a little village, or was a little village back then, east of Buffalo. Now it's a suburb of Buffalo. His dad was a barber, and my dad said that John Crawford was a good provider. And my dad told stories about his dad buying provisions in bulk, huge barrels of carrots and barrels of potatoes and big bins full of apples that were stored in the dirt cellar underneath their house. He also bought the clothes for the entire family in bulk, cases of underwear and socks, until his oldest daughter rebelled against that and threatened to tell the neighbors that he was buying her underwear, and he relented. She got a little more control over her life as a teenager. But he was also an alcoholic. My dad's father was an alcoholic, and he died before my dad was 12 years old. And at that point, my dad's mom packed up her eight children and moved them back to her parents' house in Olean, New York, further east of Buffalo, about an hour east of Buffalo. And at that point, my dad's grandparents, Thomas Henry Barnes, T.H. Barnes, and Mary Bell Peoples Barnes, became a much greater influence in his life and really helped to raise him and get him to adulthood. And I'll tell you a little bit more about T.H. Barnes and Mary Bell Barnes and all these other people as we get into the program. But I want to welcome a couple other family storytellers to the program. James Harrison and his wife, Carol Harrison. These are my cousins who live in Manhattan. Hi, Jimmy and Carol.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm so grateful that you guys are with me. I know this was a really last-minute request, and I'm really happy that you're going to be here with me to celebrate my dad's birthday. Thanks for coming on. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm not doing badly. It's a little early in the morning.
That's right. We're
really
pre-recording.
Fanny, is that my mother was your father's older sister.
That's right.
Which is a whole other... can of worms, if you wanted to go that route.
Yeah, well, we can go there. That would be that. Those are stories I can't really tell. I only know my dad's side of the story, so sure.
but keep going. We'll kind of go along with the program.
Okay.
Here.
All right. Well, the reason that I thought of you when I got down to the nitty gritty of pulling this program together was your one of my venerable cousins. You're a few years older than I am. And so you were... Don't laugh. It's true. I'm not that young myself anymore. And so you were around when my dad was younger. You know, I didn't meet my dad till he was in his 40s. So, and it was a while then before I could take in, you know, really who this guy is. And you have memories of other members of the family too. So certainly, you know, talking about Aunt Mabel as the big sister of the family. She's the oldest daughter. And that means she has incredible influence on all those younger kids, including Bill. So that, you know, those stories are great. One of the things that I also thought you might want to talk about was because you came to my parents' house in their later years, you're familiar with the dining room in their huge apartment. Yeah. And the way that my dad decorated the walls of that dining room with posters, political posters, cultural posters from the 60s, 70s, and even 80s. By the time we got to the 80s, the walls were pretty much full. And even though they lived there into the 90s, there was no room on the walls anymore.
How true.
But, you know, what do you remember? Just share whatever thoughts you've had since I dumped this on you late last night.
Okay. I remember the first time I saw it, I was probably 20. And I walked in and saw this room with posters from people that I did know, mm-hmm. people that I heard about, a whole lot of folks that never, ever didn't know who they were. Mm-hmm. And but no matter who you selected as, by the way, who is that kind of thing, your father would have a complete situation that he would go into a story about that individual, and sometimes it would even be the fact that he knew the person and had met the person. And then you got even a broader and more in-depth story about that particular individual.
You know, I never...
Everybody who was interesting during that period, he had them posted on the wall.
Jimmy, I never even thought about that aspect of it. I always saw the dining room posters as certainly a way for him to educate people, but also a way for him to say, I'm connected to all this. I'm connected to this contemporary revolution going on here. But
exactly.
that idea that triggered stories, and then he would get to talk about each of those events or people that were pictured on the posters, that for some reason, that completely passed me by. So thank you. Carol, did I hear you jump in? Say that again.
The first time I saw the dining room, there was a picture of Paul Robeson. I was so impressed that Bill knew Paul Robeson. And I don't remember any stories. I may not have asked him for any information. I just kind of absorbed it.
Well, I remember you guys being there at the house, and I know my dad just loved to have you come and visit. I guess because you were so willing to listen to his stories. That makes sense. Do you remember any of the specific posters besides that Paul Robeson?
As I'm thinking, yeah, I probably will remember somebody after a while, but he if you gave him the opportunity to talk about the people on the wall, he took advantage of that. And some of the folks he had met, some of the folks he had not met, but he thought they were important about the, I guess, the 60s and 70s, and their impact on this country and black people in general. You never knew what he was gonna say.
Yeah,
he wasn't shy, to say the least. And of course, your mom would chime in too. You know, you have to keep that one in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She would usually chime in to correct him, though.
Yes. So be it, yes.
About the dining room, I also remember your father was a great cook.
Well, say a little about that. What did you like that he did?
I remember Thanksgiving dinner. I remember apple pie. I don't know why I remember apple pie. And I just remember great conversations and good food.
Yes, very good food, in fact.
Well, it was always a highlight, I think, for him to have you guys come to Thanksgiving dinner. So you were really building his world. You were making a real difference for him, partly, I guess, because you were interested in those stories, but also because you were the family. You know, you were one of the few people who were willing to travel once we got into the 70s and the 80s. All of the older people were sticking to Jamestown and Olean and Buffalo, and they weren't going very far. So it was really important to him to have you there.
Yeah, the trip to Philadelphia is not that bad. I remember at your mother's memorial service, I turned to Jimmy and I said, "There's no reason to come to Philadelphia." It's like, this is now in our past.
Yeah.
They symbolize Philadelphia for us.
Yes. And you could always, you know, when you got there, you were going to either hear a great story about somebody or something that he had done in relationship to a poster or a theme that was on the wall. And you never knew which individual was going to be discussed that particular day. It just came out of a clear blue sky almost.
Well, I remember a small picture of Muhammad Ali. I remember Jesse Jackson up there, and of course there was that huge picture of Lenin over in the corner that kind of took over the room because he was looking down at us at every meal.
And it more than one way.
Yeah, and it was an old poster. It was from the 30s, I believe, but or at least it looked like it was that old. I'm not sure quite how old it was. And then there was another big poster, I guess, from the 70s of Du Bois. That was if you're facing the kitchen, that poster was to your right, kind of up high.
I also remember books.
Oh yeah.
Everywhere.
Books everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, when, about every subject imaginable.
When they started clearing out the house to get ready to move, I think there were something like 40,000 books in the house, because you know they were book dealers, so the basement was, filled the basement with shelves, and even when they finally did move, they took probably about 10,000 books with them to that tiny apartment that they moved into, that retirement
community. Wow.
Yeah.
I would imagine he sold the other books.
Yeah, actually,
or gave them to an institution.
Yeah, my mother handled most of that because by the time she managed to convince him it was time to move, he was pretty much into dementia, and he could still talk and tell stories and carry on conversations, but he was definitely not organized enough to be able to sell books. So she managed that, and she certainly gave away boxes and boxes of books, but she also gave some to Bloxon, to the African American collection at Temple University, and Bloxon bought a bunch of books, and other book dealers that they'd known over the years. They were doing book fairs and book festivals by that time in their lives, they knew a lot of people that were interested in their books, and they had other things besides books too. They had a lot of papers archives from different progressive organizations in the city and all over the country.
I think the thing that got me the most was the first time I walked into that room. I didn't expect to see what I saw. I walked in and I said, "My God, what is this?"
What you
and
thought
I
was
sat down and wow, and he was watching me, and I said, "Geez, there's a few people that are on this wall. This is interesting." And he started talking about, oh, he would pick a person or somebody he thought that you might want to hear about, and he would just talk. And you sat there very quietly and absorbed all this. And some of the information you might have known, but most of it you probably didn't. And if it was a personal friend attached to being somebody who was special for that era, then you got a great earful on that individual. And sometimes the relationship between him and that person, and just sometimes this information that you probably wouldn't have been able to pick up unless you read a book or knew the person or had been involved in the whole process during that period.
Yeah, that was before we were Googling everything every 5 minutes.
Oh, he would have. I can imagine him now with with computers. It would be wild because he'd have all this information at his fingertips, and it would be interesting to figure out how he would have handled all this information that you could at a moment's notice just go in and find and say, okay, gee, let's see what we got here. And then see what he would have to say. It was really, really unreal.
Well, I'm guessing he would have responded like I do, which is, oh my God, this is way too much for me. Just the sense of being overwhelmed at the amount of information that's available.
Because
it's true. He was rarely overwhelmed. It wasn't until the end of his life when he was having trouble keeping up. So you could be right. You know, it could have been that he would just have reveled in having a smartphone and access to all this information. Carol, I want to hear from you what Aunt Mabel thought when she heard these stories about maybe she was gone by then. Did she know about the dining room?
I'm not sure. Jim's mother was my mother-in-law, and she was not happy with your father's political reading.
Right, right.
So he was not invited to our wedding.
Oh,
all I knew was that there was this uncle in California. And it wasn't until she died, almost 20 years later, and we met him at her funeral, that we became friendly with your side of the family.
Right.
They were always a curiosity to me because they were there, and they were those left-wing people. And style and approach to the world, she was the opposite of her brother.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, you talked about that dining room. Her dining room was precise and perfect. You know,
right.
It was a lace tablecloth and the whole thing. So it was a very, very different experience for me. And I was really just fascinated because it took me 20 years to catch up to them.
Yeah, and having a mother-in-law and in-laws of my own, I can understand that anybody that your in-laws disapprove of is bound to be interesting to you.
Yes, it was. It was fun. But I enjoyed their welcome and their warmth once we got to know them. And I'm sorry we hadn't met them earlier.
Well,
I hadn't met them earlier.
They just loved having you guys visit, and even after they moved to the retirement home, it was always fun for them to have you there. So, and of course, I'm so happy to have you as family members.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Just just witness your willingness to participate on this call at a moment's notice. Yeah. Wow.
Something new and different is fun to do. Okay. And I think of them often as Annie. Jimmy has a few pictures around the house of your father and mother. And I often just think that I was so much richer having known them. And grateful that I had the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. You certainly enriched our lives. Being there. Any stories you can remember from Mabel's perspective from their early years? I've heard a couple.
I do remember. My mother came to Philadelphia with me. Well, I was her, I should say. Your father got some kind of an award from somebody, and Mabel came down for that. And I was, my mother kind of gave me over to Paul and another member of the family, I'm not sure who it was.
Oh, really? So this was way back.
Baby brother now had to take care of a 16-year-old.
that was way back.
But I got out of this. This one I got some great things from, because now what do you do with a 16-year-old? And he was going to go hang out with some friends or people that he knew in Philly. And we ended up at believe it or not, I guess we call it a nightclub, but in those days you might call it just a bar.
This is Uncle.
And in fact, the thing was that we were not going to ever tell Mabel, because if we did, all three of us would be in hot water forever. And she, unless she's listening and looking down on us, saying, "Oh, that's where they went." But in any event, we went to a jazz spot, and the Art Blakey, the jazz messengers, as they were called in those days, were performing. And it was Clifford Brown, Sonny Rollins, Horace Silver, Art Blakey.
I can't believe you still remember this whole roster. This is wonderful.
This is something that... just, I guess, to keep me busy, and I was told that I would sit at there and drink sodas, and they fed me, you know, potato chips and stuff like that to keep me busy. But this is my first introduction to jazz, and I've been a fan of those musicians ever since.
From hanging out with the uncles.
Yes, with your Uncle Paul. It's like if Uncle Paul's the only one still living. I understand that he's going to be 90 this year.
Oh, I thought he was even older than that. That's, yeah, because
he might be. He might be, but he's the only one left from that particular era.
Well, he was
your father and my mother's generation.
He was born in 1922, so if you can do the math fast, we can figure out how old he is.
He is pretty close to 90. I'm not going to tell him. It's over 90.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that I, we could start a whole conversation about that whole scenario and what happened afterwards. And my mother never found out, thank God, because she's still living today.
Well, that whole jazz scene and Uncle Paul being part of that and my dad's interest, I mean, that's one of the things that I grew up with was FM radio tuned to jazz all the time.
Yes.
I can't ever clap at white people's churches because I'm always on the backbeat, and I figure that's because of my dad's jazz.
But that was kind of like and that was something that was really even more special, because when we told him you went down there, you never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah,
something interesting was going to take place. You were going to hear about something that you probably would have never thought of. And your father's way of telling people about things had his own unique style. And your mother would chime in on numerous occasions, sometimes, as you said, to correct him or make an adjustment.
Yes.
But it was always, you never knew what was going to happen when you walked in the front door.
Oh, thank you, guys. I'm going to let you go. I know you have other things to do today. And I appreciate your being willing to rearrange everything to humor me and help celebrate Bill Crawford's birthday.
Okay. This is fun.
Yes, it was fun.
Okay.
And by the way, we're going to talk about, we want to hear this whole thing when it is aired.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll talk about that in the near future, okay?
Okay, and you guys are so good at this, you know, you may get another call.
Oh, Lord.
So stay tuned, listeners, for more Crawford stories. Okay. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Jimmy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You are listening to the Epic Storytelling Hour on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. This program was pre-recorded to be broadcast on Monday, March 13th, and you can tune in on your own internet device at www.enlightenradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host, and we're celebrating my earliest storyteller teacher today, my dad, Bill Crawford. You were just listening to my cousins, Jimmy and Carol Harrison from Manhattan, who were sharing some of their memories of my dad in his prime, and particularly they were talking about the dining room in my parents' apartment where they lived for, let's see, they lived there from 1967 until 1999, so 30 couple years. And during that time, my dad covered the walls of the dining room with posters representing his interests, his political activities, cultural and artistic trends out in the world. And everybody who came into the house was drawn to that dining room to look at those posters and start conversations with my dad. And as Jimmy just said, that was often the kickoff to a couple hours worth of stories as my dad talked about the people and the events that were illustrated on those posters. But I didn't tell you about the outcome of those dining room walls. The Philadelphia Folklore Project, which is a not-for-profit that was started to assist with and enrich the cultural and artistic expression of social justice movements in Philadelphia and the region, heard about my dad's dining room posters, and they came out to see, and they were so impressed with what they saw that they asked if they could take down the walls. My parents were about to move out of that apartment, and the Philadelphia Folklore Project, under the auspices of the executive director at that time, Deborah Kodish, did a real museum project. They preserved and pulled down layers and layers of those walls and resurrected them, installed them at the building that housed, still houses, the Philadelphia Folklore Project. They set it up as a conference room. They took my parents' kitchen table and kitchen chairs and set those in the middle of the room, and they still use that setting as their conference room. They were kind of commemorating all of the years of political meetings and community gatherings that took place in my parents' house by honoring my dad's folk art, they called it. Who knew that covering your dining room walls with posters was a form of artistic expression? We just thought my dad was crazy. Turned out there's a market for that kind of thing, and people want to sit around in it and think about the old days. I've been to that building many, many times and really enjoy sitting there in the room that I grew up in and thinking of my parents as icons in the community. Quite an experience that way. Jimmy and Carol in our phone conversation a few minutes ago, also talked about my Aunt Mabel, my dad's oldest sister. And one of the ways that I've learned to tell stories about my dad is to talk about his seven brothers and sisters. And they talked a little bit about Jimmy's mom, my Aunt Mabel. And they talked about the baby of the family. That's my Uncle Paul, Jimmy's Uncle Paul. And how Uncle Paul and my dad got cousin Jimmy into jazz from the age of 16 by taking him to a bar in Philadelphia when he was down visiting with Aunt Mabel one time. And Aunt Mabel can't know about that. Of course, she's not with us anymore, but he never told her that story. I understand. I'd never heard that story before until a few minutes ago. I promised you I'd tell a little bit more about my dad's early life, and talking about those brothers and sisters is one way to do that. But I want to circle back for a minute and talk about T.H. Barnes, Thomas Henry Barnes, who was the patriarch of the Barnes family and the father of my dad's mother, Mabel Cinderella Barnes Crawford. So when Mabel Cinderella was widowed at a fairly young age and moved her eight children back home to live with her parents, Thomas Henry Barnes, T.H. Barnes, and Mary Bell Peoples Barnes, she went to work cleaning other people's houses. She was a domestic worker to support her family after her husband died. So T.H. and Mary Bell became the resident parents. They were the ones who were home with those kids all the time, those eight children. And besides being the patriarch and a barber, T.H. Barnes was also a race man. At least that's what the term that was used at that period of time. And even when I was growing up, a race man was an individual who believed his responsibility and his honor was tied up in furthering the development of African Americans. And T.H. Barnes certainly took that role seriously. One of the ways he did that was to preserve the history of his own family. So he wrote down the stories that he knew, that he remembered from his own early days as the child of an escaped slave and a very, very light-skinned free-born woman in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Thomas Henry Barnes' father, Henry Barnes, escaped from slavery out of Hagerstown, Maryland, to Lewistown. And that's a story that some of my listeners may have heard me tell before, because I tell it all the time, over and over again. But besides that story, he recorded stories about Jane Williams, his mother's family, and the stories of his wife's family, Mary Bell's mother, who was the first Cinderella in the family, so far as we know. Cinderella Lott Peoples was a maid on a riverboat and was drowned. So Mary Bell was raised by her parents, the Lotts, John and Mary Lott. And T.H. Barnes recorded their stories, wrote down their stories so that we would have those for us as his descendants, as his great-grandchildren and beyond. Mary Bell's grandfather was a teamster, drove a mule team in the oil fields of Pennsylvania, which T.H. describes as a really, really difficult and dirty job, keeping those mules under control and often covered in oil, mules covered in oil as well. T.H. had a lot of respect for this kind of rough-hewn man, his Mary Bell's grandfather. So those stories are all in the family papers that my dad preserved from his time with his grandfather, T.H. Barnes. T.H.'s story of his own life includes his life in an orphanage after Henry Barnes, the escaped slave, died in 1856, I think, and then Jane Williams, T.H. Barnes' mother, died 2 years later, and their uncle, T.H. Barnes' uncle, Peter, took T.H., Thomas Henry Barnes, and his brother, little Peter, home to Brooklyn to live with him, but there was no school in Brooklyn that would take these dark-skinned little boys. Uncle Peter's own children, two girls, were very light-skinned, Sarah and Elizabeth, and so they were accepted at the white school in Brooklyn, but the two boys were enrolled at the New York Colored Orphans Asylum across the river in Manhattan as half orphans, because Uncle Peter paid $1.50 a month for each of them as their guardian so that he could take them home with him whenever he wanted to. And apparently he did that fairly frequently, a lot of weekends. So T.H. grew up feeling well-loved both at the orphanage. Pages and pages and pages of his autobiography are about his time in the orphanage and what a great place it was. It was a Quaker-founded and administered institution for 300 children, covering a square city block along Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And it largely helped make T.H. the man he was, a man of letters. He thought of himself as a writer and a reader. And his house was full of books, and my dad and my dad's brothers and sisters who grew up in that house came to value books. All of them are readers. All of the aunts and uncles that I remember were readers. Only one of them left right now, but we're holding on to him, holding on to my Uncle Paul, because he's the last of the siblings. So those stories that T.H. Barnes recorded in his autobiography and his stories about the rest of the family were passed on to me as bedtime stories, stories of the Civil War, stories of living in upstate New York before the Civil War and living in New York City, stories of T.H.'s cousins, Sarah and Elizabeth, their marriages to political men and their trips, their move south to the South in during the just before Reconstruction, and the difference that they made while they were there, and how they were run out of town and their properties confiscated, and the decline in their health, so that T.H. ended up taking them in and caring for them in their old age, along with their mother and Aunt Caroline, when their lives were destroyed by the retributions taken against them during the Jim Crow era, as those laws were being enacted in the South. T.H. talked about meeting Frederick Douglass, talked about his own work as a barber. All of those stories I heard as a 4 and 5 year old and older, as my dad told me those bedtime stories. So I have these very fond memories of my dad as a storyteller. You're listening to Epic Radio and the Storytelling Hour on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. We're celebrating the birthday of an important storyteller in my life, my dad, Bill Crawford. And I was just sharing with you some of the little tidbits, little teases of stories that my dad told me as I was growing up. I'm going to do a quick calendar update here. It's possible we might get another call for another couple stories, but we'll just interrupt and move into that call if that happens. calendar update. If you're interested in any of these family stories, there are a couple opportunities for you to hear some of them. I will be telling stories at the Unitarian Universalist Church on March 26th, last Sunday in March. I'll be doing the church service for the UU Church in Hagerstown. Oh, there's our call. Hang on. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Is this Rachel?
Yes. You know it was.
Well, I'm telling our listeners who it is. This is my daughter, Rachel, and she's going to help me celebrate my dad's birthday today by remembering some of her stories about her grandpa, Bill Crawford. Are you ready to roll, Rachel?
You ready? Yes. Oh. I don't know. About the T-shirt, the thing I thought it was when I had a sweatshirt that said that he thought was funny. It said it, the computer that said it says insufficient memory at this time. And I was going to give it to him, and he said, "Don't." That was later when he had Alzheimer's, and he said, "Don't. That's not funny."
Oh, I said that, or he said that.
I thought it was funny because he had commented on it.
Oh,
and he commented. I'm like, he said something about computers never having memory.
So I was the wet blanket. I was the one who said, "Don't do that. That's rude." And he thought it was a great T-shirt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what mothers do sometimes.
And I've seen other people. Well, it isn't funny because he did have Alzheimer's. But if you have it when you have, I think it's funny. I wear it sometimes.
Yeah, he did keep his sense of humor even when he was losing his memory, didn't he? Do you remember the posters that were up in the dining room when we visited them?
The only two I remember, there's one, and I think it had this Jumba Means Hello, and I think that's the same one that had the elephants and giraffes and around the edges and stuff.
Jumba Means Hello?
Yeah.
So so it was a Swahili word up on the poster, I guess.
I guess it's African somewhere. I don't know. That's Swahili?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, anyways.
I think so.
I think that's the one, and then there was one with African women, and I don't remember what that there was one, and then this was Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Right.
The Four Fists in the Air.
Yeah, that was one of his favorites. And you remember sitting there at the dining room table looking at the posters? Do you remember him telling stories about the posters, if you'd ask a question?
But I don't remember. I don't remember any of the posters.
Yeah. Well, you were.
Oh, there was one Native American. Oh, the oak. The one was the oak. It said the mighty oak is a little. There's the teeniest acorn that held it to the ground. And it's that big old oak tree and a couple acorns.
I don't remember that one. Okay, you've got
that
one up on me.
The other wall.
Yeah, there were four walls, and they were all covered with posters, weren't they?
That's true.
You were going to tell the story about the phonograph needle when we talked yesterday.
Oh, he said, "Were you?" I don't remember why. He said, "Were you vaccinated?" She picked up the needle on the record player. Actually, picked up one of the pieces, and he said, "You just did you ever get vaccinated with the phonograph needle?" Because I didn't know what it was. It was the little square end of the. I mean, he replaced it.
But why did he ask you if you were vaccinated with a phonograph needle?
Because I had picked it up. They had replaced the little square.
I thought he asked you that because you could talk so fast.
Well, that too.
Okay.
Because I was actually holding it at the time.
See, I never heard that part of the story. I just remember that because he often asked you if you were vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
I mean, I don't know. He asked me that all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
But at one point, I actually had one. I asked what it was. I said, "The phonograph needle." And the way you talk, you probably have to say it was a phonograph needle.
You told me a story yesterday about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in the bookstore.
Yeah, he said that they had records, because he had one, because I played it. That's why I hadn't seen it.
You saw?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was filed with the jazz.
the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer record was filed with the Jazz Records?
Yes.
At the bookstore or at the house?
At their house.
Okay, and you said he gave away some records.
Yeah, I said, why was there, and he said, oh, there's a copy left, and he said, it's Rudolph. And he said, I used to have 50, somebody donated, or however the guy, he donated 50 copies. I think it was 50 or 60 copies, and I had to give them away.
Oh, okay.
Couldn't sell them, and I had so many I had to give them away, and then they all disappeared.
Because he gave them away.
And then somebody wanted one that wouldn't buy them before when they had lots of copies and complaints and they were gone.
Okay. Well, he did give away a lot of stuff from the bookstore, and I guess he gave those Rudolph records. You said they were 45s, I think.
The 33, yeah.
And he gave them away 45? To the kids in the neighborhood?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember what size they were. But there was something before there was 33s, wasn't there?
78s.
78. Did I ever see one of those?
Yeah, I still have some. Those are the real big, heavy ones.
Oh.
Well, so when we were sitting there in the dining room at Grandma and Grandpa's house, we were often eating, right?
Yes.
So do you remember Grandpa cooking and what kind of food he made?
Oh, he also said to all who made this meal possible, from the farmer in the field to the truck driver to any this 20 people.
So that was...
he'd want to list 20 people to somebody would say... Get on with it, or interrupt, or say amen already.
So that was grace before we'd eat, yeah. Right? Thanks to all those who made this meal possible.
From the farm, and he'd say from the farmer in the field to the harvest, to the combine driver, to the, you know, and would start. I don't think anybody had let him get all the way through, all the way through 20 or 25 people.
He'd want to list them all.
Yes.
What kind of food do you remember him making?
All sorts of stuff. Turkey, and I do remember, or to the duck. We had 1 year. We had duck
for Thanksgiving.
Duck instead of turkey, and I said, "Isn't it small for a Thanksgiving turkey?"
And he said,
"Remember, and it was duck."
And it was duck. Yeah, I remember that Thanksgiving too.
And then green beans and ham.
Uh huh.
For some reason, I don't know if it was the same meal or not, but there was like green beans and ham.
Uh huh.
Like shred, and it wasn't just like one or two pieces. It was like shredded ham. It was as much ham as green beans. Which was good. I mean, well, I don't eat ham, but that person was healthy. And there was something else I was going to say about food.
You talked about biscuits.
That I thought of last night.
You talked about biscuits.
Yeah, the biscuit. No, the recipe. There was another one I thought.
Well, tell the biscuit story.
No, the biscuits was that you had a recipe. This was later. And you had a recipe, and you said, help me make the biscuits. I came home from school or camp or something. You said, help me make the biscuits. So I'm sitting there reading the recipe out loud. And I said, 10 pounds of flour? And you said, oh, it's for 200 people. So then you said, figure out how to make it for 10 people.
Right. So that was Grandpa's Army cookbook.
Yes, it was from yes.
And I was going to make the same biscuits that he used to make in the Army, but we had to change the recipe because it was mass quantities.
Yes, it was biscuits for 200 people.
Right.
And it said that on there. It said 200. There was something about food.
Well, there was the dead cow and dead soldier story.
Oh, that was another thing. We were sitting somewhere in the dead soldiers. Well, I said dead cow. There was a milk carton, and the milk carton got tipped. It was empty because I had poured the last thing, and it got tipped over. And I said dead cow.
Because
and I thought it was a dead soldier.
Because
and then he said the beer bottles were dead soldiers.
So the dead cow was a phrase you learned from camp, where
probably.
when the
I don't know where I learned that.
When the milk cartons were empty.
I heard it at camp, but I don't know if that's the first place.
Okay. All right.
And he said at one point, he said something, and he says, amen. It was something. It might have been at dinner, and somebody said, amen. He said, amen, I need a drink, pass the martinis.
All right. I'm going to let you go. I know you need to get ready for your next activity today. But thank you, Rachel. That was very good of you to call in. And you're a brave soul to talk on the radio impromptu storytelling about your grandpa. He'd be proud.
And then Pastor Martin, he said that. He said, I don't drink. He's like, oh, okay.
All right. I will talk to you later on today, okay?
Today. I'll call you at 5:30.
Okay. Sounds good.
Oh, okay. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Epic Storytelling Hour on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. This is your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford. That was my daughter, Rachel, who was telling a bit of rambling story about her grandpa, my dad, Bill Crawford, because we're celebrating his birthday today. So I think I was doing a calendar update, and I was saying if you're interested in hearing some of Bill Crawford's family stories, you can hear me tell stories for a church service at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown on March 26th. Sunday service there is at 10:45. Get there early so you get a good seat. The church is at 13245 Searfoss Pike in Hagerstown. That's Salem Avenue Extended at the west end of town. And the topic for that service is John Chapman, also known as Johnny Appleseed. You probably know Johnny Appleseed as the man who planted apple trees and apple seeds all over the American frontier, but he was also an inland waterman, a greatly respected and skilled waterman on the riverways of New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana. He was a pacifist and a vegetarian and a religious eccentric, passionately religious man who brought books and literacy to the American frontier in 19th century America. We're going to do a water ceremony to honor John Chapman during that service at the Unitarian Church, and I'll be telling a few of my own family stories woven into those stories about John Chapman. We're celebrating the return of spring and making connections to Unitarian Universalist principles as embodied by John Chapman. That's March 26th at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 10:45. That's Sunday. I'll also be telling at a house concert on April 15th in Chambersburg, PA. And for that event, that's the home of Marianne and Larry Hayes, and if you're interested in coming to that house concert, you need to call me at 301-730-1638, and I will put you in touch with Larry or Marianne, because they don't have a huge amount of space. We can fit a good mob in their house, but you want to make sure you get your tickets in advance so that there's room for you. And I can share that information with you. I'll be telling grandma stories for that house concert on April 15th, the evening of April 15th. And I can give you details if you call me at 301-730-1638. The other calendar updates that I just wanted to repeat, you've heard these on past programs of the Epic Storytelling Hour. Speak storytelling series coordinated by Adam Booth in Shepherdstown at the Shepherdstown Community Club will start up again on April 18th. They've been on hiatus for a couple months over the winter, but season five starts again on April 18th. Normally, Speak meets the second Tuesday of the month, but in order to get this incredible storyteller, Adam's moved the venue to the third Tuesday in April 18th. After April, he'll go back to the second Tuesday. Antonio Holsha will be the storyteller kicking off the season on April 18th. He's a Brazilian-American mime and storyteller, and that show may sell out, so you want to contact Adam soon and get your tickets in advance. To reach Adam, you can go to the website at speakwv.org. You can also email Adam at info@speakwv.org or call him at 304-886-9481. I was on the website the other day. He does not yet have the rest of the season posted, but I'm sure that'll be happening any day now. $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Doors open at 7, but the show starts at 7:30. In Hagerstown, also at the Unitarian Universalist Church, Stories in the Round starts up April 24th. That's season 4, after a couple months off for the winter. And our first storyteller will be Eloise Schottler, who will be telling Ready to Serve, the story of the nurses from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing who were sent by General Pershing to the battlefields of France to take care of American doughboys in World War I. That's at 7 p.m. on April 24th, $10 in advance, $12 at the door, and you can call me at 301-730-1638 to get tickets or more information. You can also email me at Fanitsky, F as in Fanny, A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. I'm going to leave the calendar at that. And I think we have time for a quick 10-minute, it's not even 10 minutes, it's probably 8-minute story. This is a traditional African-American tale that I did not hear from my dad, but when I first heard this story, it reminded me of the kind of stories that my dad would tell, because it has a social justice ending. It's a traditional tale. My dad was fond of picking up stories about from the people that he met or sharing stories from his childhood, but there was always a message at the end. So let me tell you, Brother Rabbit's butter test. The animals were all working together to raise the crops. It was Brother Rabbit, Brother Turtle, Brother Deer, Brother Fox, and Brother Bear. They was looking forward to the harvest so much, they went in together and bought a whole pound of butter. Once they had that butter, they thought about it all the time, imagining how good it was going to taste on the corn, on the potatoes, even on the greens. But they were working together. So once they bought the butter, they still went out to the fields every day, hoeing and weeding, planting a few more rows of vegetables that would still produce into the fall. And they were there, hoeing and pulling weeds, putting seeds in the ground, when Rabbit says, "No, no, no, no." Well, all the rest stop working and look over at Brother Rabbit. "What is it, brother? What's wrong?" Brother Rabbit say, well, you hear Miss Rabbit, don't you? She's calling me again. I don't have time to fool with her." And all the others say, "Oh, Brer Rabbit, you better go. Go check on her. See what she want." So off goes Brother Rabbit to the house. He comes back by and by. "What she want, Brother Rabbit?" "Well, we have us a new baby." And all the animals smiled and said their congratulations and said to give their regards to Miss Rabbit. "You named that new baby?" "Yeah, I'm call him Quarter Gone." They all went back to work. An hour later, Brother Rabbit commenced to shout, "What you want now?" Why, who are you talking to, Brother Rabbit?" "Oh, it's Miss Rabbit again. She's calling again." "Well, you best go see what she needs. No good will come of it if you don't." Brother Rabbit grumbled and groused. "I am working here. I don't have no time to fool with her." But they urged him on. "You best go, Brother Rabbit." So Brother Rabbit goes back to the house. Sometime later, he comes on back. "What she want this time, Brother Rabbit?" "Oh, she just had another baby, same as before." "Another boy? What'd you name this'n?" "Call this'n Half Gone." "That is an unusual name. It's a good 'un for sure." An hour later, Brother Rabbit yells out, "Leave me be!" And others ask, "Who are you hollering at? There's nobody here." "It's Miss Rabbit again. She calling me and calling me all morning." "Well, then go on, Brother Rabbit. Find out what she needs." "No, no, no. I can't be running back there every hour. I don't have time to fool with her. We'll never get this work finished." But they insisted. "You go on now. Find out what she needs." Brother Rabbit goes to the house. This time, he stayed a little longer. When he comes back, they're all waiting to hear what she need this time. She had two of them, twins this time. Well, everyone was happy to hear that. They all nodded and smiled, patted him on the back. And Brother Rabbit said, "It took me some time to come up with two names. I wanted good names that go together good since they're twins." "But what'd you decide?" "I'm going to call them Three Quarters Gone and All Gone." The animals wanted to go see these just-born children, but Brother Rabbit said, "Let's just work till the sun's a little higher in the sky. It's not even noon yet." But he sent Brother Turtle to the house for water for everyone. It took Brother Turtle a long time, but he brought water back for everyone, and they all drank it. Then Brother Rabbit wanted to smoke a cigarette, so he sent Brother Deer to the house for the tobacco, the rolling paper, and matches. Soon as Brother Deer was round the bend, Brother Rabbit asked Brother Fox to run ahead and take the horses to the barn so they could plow later. "We'll meet you up there," he said. And Brother Fox left for the barn. But as soon as he was round the bend, Brother Rabbit stopped working, gathered up his tools, and said they should all head back to the house. So they all gathered up their tools and started walking. But they had to go slow on account of Brother Turtle going so slow. When they finally made it to the house, there was Brother Fox on the porch waiting for him. Brother Fox said, "I sure am hungry. Let's eat." Brother Rabbit was the first one in the kitchen, and he hollered, "Where's the butter? The butter's gone!" They all talked at once, and then Brother Rabbit was the first accused. "You remember he came up here to see about Miss Rabbit?" "Me? No, no, I came up here, checked on Miss Rabbit, never even looked at the butter. But listen, Brother Turtle and Brother Deer and Brother Fox were here, too. Now, I'm not accusing anyone of anything, 'cause I don't know. I couldn't say if they did. I couldn't say if they didn't. We need a butter test. Here's what we need to do." They all agreed they needed a butter test, and they wanted to hear how it would work. So Rabbit explained, "We will make fire, big one. Set fire to that big old log there. We each run and jump the fire. The one that ate the butter will have too much in his stomach. He'll fall in. One falls in, he ate the butter." They set fire to the old log, and it commenced to smoke and then burn. And when the fire was blazing, Brother Rabbit said, "All right, we take a turn." Brother Deer made the first run and jump. And Brother Rabbit said, "That's good. I'll go next." And he did run and jump. Now, Brother Turtle was hoping the wind would pick up. He knew he couldn't jump very far. And the wind came up, blowed the smoke along the ground on either side of the burning log. Brother Turtle said, I'll go next. And he ran right round the log through the smoke. And when he got to the other side of the log, he flipped over on his back and rolled over. And all the others were looking up over the burning log where the others had jumped. And when they saw him rolling on the other side of the log, they thought he jumped too. But then the only one left was Brother Bear. And Brother Rabbit said to him, "You so big and heavy, you might not be able to get high enough to get over. When you get above the middle of the fire, make sure you cross your legs and pull them up so you don't get burned." So Brother Bear leaps over the fire, and when he gets to the middle, he crosses his legs and pulls them up. But of course that slows him down, and he falls in the fire. Brother Rabbit commenced to shout, "He's the one! He's the one! He's ate all our butter!" And they all commenced to chase Brother Bear away from the house, away from the garden, shouting at him, "Never come back!" They all said Brother Rabbit was so clever to think of this butter test, and not one of them animals recollected that Brother Bear had not even been one of those who gone up to the house while they was working. And that is just like people. In a courtroom, too many times a man is found guilty on evidence that doesn't really exist. A smart lawyer will use his words to put you someplace you never were at all, and then trap you up with questions and butter tests, and you end up behind bars. And everyone says, "What a clever lawyer." That's a story for Bill Crawford's birthday. We're celebrating my dad, the storyteller, and his birthday today on Epic Radio on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And if you're interested on what happens in courtrooms and afterwards to too many people, there is a program about prisons from the inside in Hagerstown on Sunday afternoon, this coming, I do that every time. Today is Monday. You're hearing this broadcast on Monday. So the program about prisons was yesterday in Hagerstown. And I'll tell you all about that next week. And maybe I'll tell you another Brother Rabbit story. If I can think of one that's related to people who can't remember what day it is. Okay, I'm going to close out the Epic Storytelling Hour on Eastern Panhandle Independent Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. We've been celebrating the birthday of my first storytelling mentor, Bill Crawford, who died in 2002. We had a memorial service for him immediately afterwards at his retirement community where my parents lived in Philadelphia. 100 people crammed the room for that service. And then a couple months later, we held a bigger event in the spring at the Ethical Culture Hall on Rittenhouse Square, where Bill Crawford liked to hang out on Sundays in his later years. There were almost 200 people there with a dinner that many, many of the 200 contributed to, many of them bringing food that they remembered Bill making for them when he had them visit him at his house. And we put together a book of his recipes and gave it out at that memorial service. So some people are even now still cooking some of Bill Crawford's foods. I do miss my dad, but I also miss all those wonderful people who loved him almost as much as I do. And that's really what the stories are for, to bring that back, those people, and help them live again. Happy birthday, Bill Crawford. We're still telling your stories. This is Fanny Crawford closing out the Noontime Epic Radio Storytelling Hour, Eastern Panhandle Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. The Epic Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for music. And 30 minutes. Economics and Social Science podcasts with John Case in about 30 minutes. Music in between. Tune in at www.enlightenradio.org, and I'll be talking to you next Monday at 12 noon. Have a good week.